Hello, everybody, and welcome into another edition of the Eye on the Tigers podcast here at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It's our Mizzou-centric podcast. I'm Ben Fredrickson, joined alongside Dave Matter from the Columbia Bureau, who is fresh back, just walked in the door from his road trip to Nashville, where he covered a pretty big win for this Missouri Tigers basketball team. Tigers take down the Commodores 74-66, thanks to an 18-4 run in the second half, fueled largely by Jonte Porter. Dave, you captured it well in today's story. Everybody was looking at Michael Porter. Was he going to play? Was he going to not play? And while some didn't take their eyes off Michael, Jonte had the best game of his career in a huge game for this team.
Yeah, he was really outstanding. I mean, 24 points. He made 9 of 10 shots, and he did it all different kind of ways. You know, he did the pick-and-pop game at the top of the key. Vanderbilt went zone, and they just plugged him in the middle of that zone where he became sort of like a point forward where he just read the defense, and if they were playing him, he'd pass it out to somebody, and that's how he got a lot of his assists. He had 6 assists on the night, or matched his career high. And if not, he would just take the shot. And he made a couple of mid-range jumpers. He even got a dunk in. So he was outstanding. And on a night when Cassius Robertson really didn't do a whole lot, he didn't really take many shots, Jonte Porter really emerges as that other scoring threat that they've kind of needed for a while.
I think it's important to read this stat line in full, because if you just looked at the points, you might not get a sense of what he accomplished. His career high, 24 points. He did it in 29 minutes. He shot 9 of 10 from the field. He missed just one field goal. He made both of his free throws, and he also grabbed, 8 rebounds and dished 6 assists and blocked a shot. Not a bad night for the youngster, and really a game that Missouri looked to be in trouble in the first half. The Tigers kind of started out slow, and then it looks kind of like, oh, no, this is trending in the way their past few games had trended, and something happened at halftime. I don't know if Konzo Martin peeled some paint off the wall or what, but they came out looking like a different team after the half.
Yeah, and really it started late in the first half. Vanderbilt all of a sudden went cold. They couldn't score. Missouri took 2 charges in the last minute and a half or so. Colin Van Leer took one, and Jonte Porter took one. And his teammates kind of joked with him afterwards that was rare for him to do, because I don't know if he's done that all year. And Vanderbilt couldn't miss early. Then they just went into a total dry spell. Konzo told Jordan Barnett in the locker room, or at some point at halftime, and said, okay, you have to guard Roberson now. This is your job. Lock him up. And he did a really good job on him. And Roberson, I think, had 13 points at halftime, and he had 6 in the second half. And Vanderbilt went almost 7 minutes without a point there during that long stretch. So Missouri's, as we've said all year, when in doubt, they had to return to their defense and lock a team up in the half court and then figure out who's going to be the playmaker or the scorer on the other end. And this night it was Porter and Jordan Barnett, who had a really nice game too, with I think 17 points.
Yeah, he played an all-around game and was hitting some threes again, which is good to see for him, because he kind of comes and goes at points. All right, Porter on Porter, we'll talk about that. Michael, is he back? Jonte, how far can he carry this team if he continues to play like this? And we'll get a little bit more into the Vandy game. We're going to also look ahead and look at the Arkansas game, which is a big game for Mizzou. Senior night, last final regular season game before the SEC tournament. And I know that you guys have a lot of questions about the SEC tournament. Dave has been punching numbers in his projection system in the Columbia Bureau, and he's got kind of a good sense of where the Tigers could finish in terms of good and also bad when it comes to conference tournament seeding, which is here in St. Louis, which is going to be very fun. It's going to be a great event. I'm actually really looking forward to it. We also have some questions for you. We put out a request for questions on Twitter for the podcast, so thank you to everyone who responded to us. And some were not so serious, and some are actually serious. We'll get to some of the best ones here at the end of the podcast. Dave, before we go too far into how Jonte performed, it would be probably a little avoiding the million-dollar question to ask you straight up, did you think Michael was going to play last night? What do you make of the fact that he didn't play? My impression of it was that I would have been surprised if he played at Vanderbilt. To me, I've always kind of been looking toward this Arkansas game as the one that seems most likely. I think the broadcasters on the game, for those who watched at home, very clearly thought that Michael was going to play, seemed a little upset that he didn't play, seemed to be a little disappointed by that. What's your feel for the situation where it stands right now?
Well, it's hard to really know anything, and I think the honest answer is I don't think Konzo Martin really knows the answer either. Everyone wants to believe that this is some kind of conspiracy, that Missouri is being very deceptive here. You know, I got tweets last night from people saying that this is all Missouri's. This is their way of trying to drum up excitement and get more people in the house for Saturday's game. I mean, they've already sold out a season ticket, so I don't understand how, you know, this is some kind of conspiracy to get attendance up for the final home game of the year. But I honestly think he's being honest. Konzo was when he says this is a day-to-day deal. They have to evaluate him in practice and see what he can do. Now, yeah, he practiced a few times the last few days. I think he's had three full practices or around there since he was cleared. And he went through shoot-around before the game yesterday. Watching him last night, I didn't get the impression that he was going to play. He was taking some jump shots. He was very casual. It's not like the whole medical staff was watching his every move. His feet weren't really leaving the ground. You know, from what I've gathered, the practices in Nashville the last few days, he wasn't necessarily showing the explosiveness that you would expect from a Michael Porter Jr. And Konzo has said before, you know, his health is number one, and he's not a guy that they want to put out there just for 5 minutes and just try to get the most out of a couple series. I mean, they want him to be Michael Porter Jr. And I still, even though he's been cleared to practice, it would be naive to think that he is back to what he was before the surgery. And does that mean he's still better than a Brett Rau or a Cullen Van Leer? Well, yeah, probably, but there's not a million-dollar, multi-million-dollar investment in those guys. You have to think about his future, too, and Konzo has been very, very consistent about that, that, you know, he doesn't want to put a guy out there if he's not ready to go. So we'll see. I think every game that comes up, there's a better chance of seeing him play. This will be the only chance for him, if he does indeed leave Missouri after this year, for the home fans to see him at Mizzou Arena. But I go into these things not knowing what to expect at this point, because I don't think anybody really knows what to expect.
Yeah, well, I've been out of the Porter predicting business for a while now, and I think we both feel the same way on this. And I think people get irritated when they say, well, you're supposed to know. And as we've discussed, sometimes you don't know. And sometimes it's better as a reporter and a journalist to say, look, we don't know. We're not in the practices. We haven't seen him play. We've heard maybe how he looks or how he doesn't look, and that's all we have to go off of. When it's better to do that, in my opinion, than to say he'll definitely be back or we think he's going to be back, and then all of a sudden people get upset when he doesn't play. The practice thing seems to have been – I feel like so many people are just looking at it as this kind of myth. Like, well, if he's cleared to practice, then he should be cleared to play. He's Michael Porter Jr. And Hindy is. He's an outstanding player. He's probably going to be a top, 10 draft pick no matter what. Could be even higher than that. Could be a top 5 pick. And if he plays and plays well, maybe he gets back up to, like, number 1 or number 2. We'll see. But no one goes from not playing at all until the 2 minutes of the season opener to having surgery and coming back and being the guy that you were when you walked out of the practice. You know, there are things that you have to play catch up on. Some guys do it better than others, but he still has to get in some sort of a basketball shape. He has to prove that he can handle the contact. And I feel like when we've written these things, when we've said these things, people just kind of roll their eyes and think, well, it's Michael Porter Jr. If he's cleared to practice, cleared to play. Konzo Martin has not been misleading. He's been the opposite of misleading. He has given the blueprint for how this works. We'll see if he's cleared to practice. Okay, he's cleared to practice. We're going to see how he's going to practice, and we're not going to tell you that there's a set limit on the number of practices because we don't know yet. We want to see how he practices and recovers and responds. That's all he said, and that's all this team has done to this point. So for people who are coming up with this idea there's this big conspiracy theory, I can tell you that the team would rather have a definite answer, yes or no, because that way they can move forward. That's why they wanted to make Michael not a daily issue earlier in the season. And that's why Konzo came out and said, look, we're not going to know anything until there's this doctor's appointment in Dallas. We'll have an update then. Until then, let's not talk about it. Now, he doesn't always get his wish there, but they have tried not to make this a spectacle. more so than, you know, try to beat the drum and hype things up when it comes to, is he back, is he not back? I can promise you that they have tried to do it in the other way. Right now, they're just in the point where they don't know yet. They're, every day could push them over the edge one way or the other. And I don't necessarily get the notion that there is like this drop dead date of, well, if he didn't play at Vanderbilt, then he's not going to play this season. Well, no, then he could play against Arkansas, or he could play some in the first game of the tournament. I don't think the team is going to get to the spot where it's like, well, if it, all of a sudden there's we decide he looks good at practice, it's too late to put him in a game.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, these games, especially last night, like, yeah, a tournament game is do or die. You lose, you go home. But that game last night was essentially do or die, because if you lose that one, you're in serious trouble for getting into the tournament. So there were some serious stakes in that game last night. So, yeah, I agree with you on everything. I don't think anyone is purposely, you know, being misleading with any information, because I just don't think they know. This is something you have to evaluate every day, and you have to evaluate multiple times a day. And I know we all want those answers. We want them for the point of having the information to share it with everyone, and the fans want. I mean, this is such an emotional issue for fans, and the ones who can kind of step back from the situation a little bit and say, okay, this is a fluid deal, and you know, and also we don't know what kind of conversations are going on behind the scenes between, you know, Michael and Konzo and Michael Porter Sr. and Konzo and Michael Porter Sr. and Michael Jr. There's just so many layers to this story that has made it complicated from the minute he took himself out of that game against Iowa State, you know, 3.5 months ago.
And now the big question is, how does he look in practice? And that's what, you know, they're not gonna open up the doors and let us watch him practice. So anytime you hear about, well, he looked good in shoot around, I think that it's important for people to understand the difference here. Because I'm not trying to be snarky, but there is a big difference between a pregame shoot around and a practice. A pregame shoot around is you go out, you get a light sweat, you're shooting jump shots, you're doing the layup drills, and you're maybe throwing down a couple dunks. When these broadcasters talk about, well, we watched Michael Porter Jr. go through walkthrough today and he looked great. Well, that's not going to give you a real good sense of how he's going to play in a game or in a real practice. A real practice has live scrimmage periods. It has full contact. It has, you know, 3-on-3 situations where you're trying to, you know, get a bucket. It's like real basketball. The pregame walkthroughs are designed to get you ready for a game. They're more warm-up type activities. They're not, you know, hey, go and drive in hard, take a hard foul, try to finish the shot, and then get up and go take a charge. I mean, this team practices hard. So if he doesn't look right in that setting, then there's going to be reluctance putting him into a game. And it doesn't mean that he doesn't want to play. It might mean that he's dying to play. I can tell you watching the game, I was not at the game, you were, but I'm watching it from home last night. He looked to be not mad, but he looked like he wanted to be out there. He looked disappointed he wasn't playing. And I'm sure he probably is, because as a teenager who is very good at this game, I'm sure he thinks that, you know, even if I'm not 100%, if I go out there and my wind is not there, but I can still get some buckets, I'm probably better than a lot of these guys on the court. Let me get something. But if the coaches are watching him and saying, man, he doesn't look right, we've seen him when he's right, then they're going to be reluctant to put him in there. And I would think to some degree, his parents would appreciate that. And I don't know that it's his parents being having some ulterior motive or having, you know, the end game in mind. I think they want their son to be healthy, and I think they're going to be look at that from a different perspective than Michael, who wants to get out there and play.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I think people forget too, he is a 4 or a 3 on the floor, and that means he's playing at the 4. He's playing the position that Kevin Purrier and Jontay Porter play most of the time. You're in traffic all the time. You're absorbing contact. You're going up and getting rebounds. You're in the lane. He's going to get bopped around pretty hard when he's in there. If not, if he plays on the perimeter as a 3, the position we usually see, you know, Jordan Barnett play, you're going to be covering, you know, guys that are smaller than you, quicker than you, and you've got to be able to defend them. And you know, he's still coming off back surgery. Is he equipped to do that right now? Those are the things that Konzo Martin will watch in practice to evaluate if he's ready or not. Not, oh, hey, he scored 20 points and made 6 of 8 threes. No, it's his fitness as far as just being agile enough. Where's the explosiveness? Can he defend? Can he, you know, absorb contact and dish it out when he needs to too? So, and again, that's the stuff that we're not seeing, and I'm not sure that people that are watching practice are really, you know, tuning into.
Yeah. So that said, it would be quite the scene if he were to play against Arkansas on Saturday, the last home game of the regular season. That would be something to see. And this team, we can kind of shift the focus back to the team right now because they're in a unique spot. They got the win against Vanderbilt. That should hopefully for them help their case of making the NCAA tournament. Another win against Arkansas would certainly boost their level in the SEC tournament and really kind of make them a lock, for sure lock, headed into the NCAA tournament. Do you think right now that they are a lock for the NCAA tournament no matter what happens against Arkansas, no matter what happens in the SEC tournament, or do you think they need to pick up one more win somewhere along the way?
I think they're pretty safely in right now. You know, most of the projections going into last night had them as a 9 seed, and they won. They won a conference road game. Granted, Vanderbilt's the lowest RPI team in the SEC, but they still did win the game. They have 4 conference wins now. I think they're up to 11 quadrant 1 and 2 wins. That's pretty good. To get into double digits is really good. You know, losing to Arkansas won't kill their RPI because Arkansas is up there really high. So, you know, you don't want to say lock because that guarantees something that you just can't guarantee. But I think they're pretty safely in. I thought last night would have been detrimental because it would have been a third loss to a team with an RPI in the hundreds. They already have the home loss to Ole Miss, and the killer was the Illinois loss because they're in like the 160s, 170s. You never would have thought that going into the season, but that's been a real drag on their profile. So I think right now they're safely. And look, and other bubble teams are going to lose here in the next 10 days. So it's not in a vacuum. It's not just does Missouri get in. It is how does Missouri stack up to the other teams whose credentials and resumes are pretty similar. And if they were a 9 going into last night and they win, you know, I think they're still safely in the conversation.
Well, losing to Arkansas won't knock them out, but beating the Razorbacks at home would make them feel pretty good headed into the tournament. And Arkansas, since Missouri saw him last, is cruising right along. 10-7 in the league, 21-9 overall, 15-2 at home, but just 3-6 on the road. This team doesn't travel well, but they do have that effective press that Missouri struggles so much against. Mike Anderson coming back to Columbia for another trip. What do you make of the way Arkansas is playing right now? As of today, we're recording this on a Wednesday, they're third in the conference, right behind Auburn and Tennessee in the standings.
Yeah, they've won 6 of 7. The only loss was at home to Kentucky. But they've got a couple road wins. They won at Georgia. They won at Ole Miss. And most impressively, last Saturday, they won at Alabama. So they're slowly but surely sort of deconstructing the myth that Mike can't win on the road. Obviously, they're much better at home. So we'll see what happens on Saturday. But I would expect, whether or not Michael Porter Jr. plays, I mean, I'd expect a great atmosphere for this game. You're going to have senior days for Cassius Robertson and Jordan Barnett. So much is on the line. This is the game that the SEC would love to be the rivalry game between the two, and I don't know if it ever will be looked at that way. But a lot of good storylines. Just I think it would be interesting if this is a game where they at least keep Michael in uniform so he's on the bench and you just never know when he's going to go check in. I can't imagine they would start him if he's ready because you at some degree – you do want to keep the spotlight on those two seniors who have played all season long and played great. And I think if you start Michael, that he really would outshine them just as far as the reception goes. But it's a tough game regardless. Like you mentioned, the press. I mean, people have asked all year, why don't teams press Missouri for 40 minutes? Well, it's really hard to do if that's not what you do normally. You have to have great conditioned players to be able to do that. And it has to be part of your makeup. Well, it is for Arkansas. They can do it, maybe not 40 minutes, but they can do it a lot. And they did it a lot early on when they played Missouri in Fayetteville, and really that's what got Missouri in a hole early because they turned it over a bunch. We'll see how much they want to do it on the road Saturday, but that's something that they definitely have in their arsenal.
Well, they could just announce Michael Porter Jr. is going to the NBA and treat him as a senior on senior day.
Sure, there you go.
So that would be another way to go about it for the three people who actually think that he might come back next year and play. Okay, so Saturday's going to be a big day. I do have a big question for you. Have you made any progress in your attempt to get Missouri to play O Canada for Cassius Robertson before the game?
I've mentioned it a few times, at least on Twitter, and last I heard it was possibly in the works, and I'm going to take credit for it when it happens,
sure,
if it does.
As you should.
I think it would be a great gesture. I mean, can you think of a one-year player at Missouri who's made more of an impact, who has been more probably popular? I mean, he's the MVP of this season, no doubt about it. I think he's a first-team All-SEC guy. At least he will be on my ballot. So I'm sure he's going to get a really great reception on Saturday.
As he should. I mean, this was a guy who came to Missouri to be kind of an X factor. He was a supporting cast member. He was going to be the three-point threat that really benefited from the play of Michael and Jeremiah and Jonte, and that was supposed to be his role. Well, he's turned into the leading scorer, the team leader, the point guard, de facto point guard at times, not a role that he had ever played before. He told me this year that he's never, ever played true point guard in his life before coming to Mizzou, which is staggering considering, A, he just hadn't done it before, B, he transferred up a level. And you hear a lot about him being the leading scorer among grad transfers in the country. What you don't hear about is that the other guys in that discussion all transferred down. Their competition got easier. They went to smaller programs. They couldn't cut it at the big levels they went down. Cassius is the only one who stepped up, who went from Canisius to the SEC and has really been, you know, outstanding. Now, he didn't have as great of a game at Nashville, but he didn't shoot a ton. He kind of was more of a facilitator, but where would this team be without Cassius Robertson is a question that makes Missouri fans shudder. So he does certainly deserve a good round of applause on his one-and-done senior night at Mizzou. All right, Dave, let's talk some SEC tournament here, because you've been plugging away at the projections and you think you have the kind of the range that Missouri could finish, likely probably a 7 seed, but it could be a little bit better or a little bit worse. Tell us how that happens.
If they win Saturday, there's 10, as we record this, there are 10 SEC games left, 7 on Saturday and then 3 Wednesday night. From what I can gather, punching these all the different possible outcomes in, Missouri can finish as high as 5th. I can't find a way for them to finish 4th, which would give them a double bye into the tournament. Arkansas beating Auburn on Tuesday kind of hurt their chances there, and when it seems like when you put all the different combinations in, the lowest they can get is around, by winning, the lowest they can get around is like 6, 7, maybe 8. I don't think they can slip any way past 10, and I'm not even sure they can get to 10. So they're going to be in that mid range somewhere, and 5th if they win, and then and a couple other games fall the right way. They're just such a logjam of similar teams in the middle of the pack. You got Auburn and Tennessee up top. You've got a few teams at the bottom, Ole Miss and Vanderbilt at the bottom, and then everybody else is within just a couple games of each other. So, which I think can make for a great tournament. I mean, I think it's going to be really unpredictable, and should be a really great event in this kind of one-off year that it's not going to be in Nashville. It's going to be in St. Louis. So it looks like Missouri is going to be playing Thursday for sure. It just depends on which slot they're going
to
be in.
Right. The only way they would not play on Thursday is if they somehow found a way to jump up to 4, and that would have them with the game on Friday. There's no way they can get down as low as 11, so they will not be playing Wednesday. So if you're coming to the games, you're going to be probably watching. You're going to be watching Missouri play at some point on Thursday afternoon or evening, depending on where they wind up slotted. I agree with you about the tournament setting. I looked it up the other day. If you go to the worst teams in the conference, you know, if you look up South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt, and you look at their best wins, each one of these teams has knocked off a good team, at least one good team.
Yeah.
I mean, South Carolina has knocked off some of the best teams in this conference, And not just it's not just a fluke. I mean, this league this year, the ceiling, we'll see how high it is. We'll see how some of these teams fare in the NCAA tournament, right? But the basement is so much higher than it used to be that you could see any of these teams beating any of these other teams on, you know, at any point in this tournament. I really think this tournament is wide open for kind of a dark horse to emerge and take the thing, which could end up at the SEC getting even more teams in the NCAA tournament. If someone that's not projected in goes on a run here, I wouldn't put it past this conference because everyone is so competitive and it's just been a meat grinder of a schedule for these teams this year.
Yeah, I mean, you look, and as of what the seedings would have been as of Monday, I haven't looked to see what they were after Tuesday's games, but I mean, Texas A&M would have been in one of the play-in games. This was a team that was ranked number in the top five back in November.
Right.
A lot's gone wrong for them this year, but they still have NBA talent at a couple spots and are capable of beating anybody. I mean, they beat Auburn just a few weeks ago. You know, Ole Miss has had their issues with their coaching change, but we did see them walk right into Mizzou Arena and not necessarily dominate, but they won and played really well. And you watch that team and think, gosh, how is this record so bad? And South Carolina, like you mentioned, I mean, Frank Martin is worth the price of admission on its own because, you know, he coaches like crazy over there on the sideline and had this team, this program in the Final Four a year ago. So I think it can be a great tournament. I mean, look like Alabama's going to be a 7, 8, 9 seed. I mean, they've got Colin Sexton, who's going to be a lottery pick on that team. Mississippi State has done some good things this year. LSU, Will Wade, what he's done this year has been impressive considering how widely they were picked to be the worst team in the league. So, yeah, I don't know how much this has really been marketed in St. Louis that much. I don't know if the casual fan hears about it a lot around town because it is kind of a foreign event. It's never been there before and it's not coming back necessarily anytime soon. But, man, I think it's got a chance to be a great event.
Yeah, definitely. Tennessee is entering the tournament on a very high note. They've won their last three games, but they're no secret. They're battling for the conference championship with a chance to win it this week. Another team to watch, and this isn't like a sleeper team because everybody obviously knows Kentucky, but Kentucky's won three games in a row, and the Kentucky team that Missouri saw in Lexington is not the team that it played in Columbia, and they will also have a packed house. Big Blue Nation will come and make the relatively short trip, and that place is going to feel like a Kentucky home game every time the Wildcats take the floor. So you never count them out in a tournament setting. They're playing much better brand of basketball than we saw early on in the season. And Alabama is the one that you look at and go, man, you don't want to play them because you know how good they can be and you've seen some of those great wins, but you also wonder what direction they're headed. They've lost four in a row now coming down the stretch. So they're kind of that team that you think maybe flames out in the tournament, but also you don't really want to see them on your side of the bracket or on your line either, just because you've seen some of the teams that they've knocked off. And I don't know that anybody in the league wants to play South Carolina. They should scare everybody just because they're not going to win the tournament, but they can take anyone out of it on their way down.
Oh, yeah. I don't think anybody would be surprised if they make it to Friday, if they win a couple games and take out somebody on that Thursday round who's expecting to, you know, go a little bit further. And I know we've mentioned it a bunch too, but nobody has what Missouri has, and that is the complete uncertainty, the wild card, the X factor, whatever you want to call it, the five-star freshman on the bench who may or may not play. So that just adds a whole level of intrigue to Missouri games and whoever they end up playing too.
Okay, so let's get to some of these Twitter questions, Dave. Of course, a lot of them are Michael Porter Jr. related, but they maybe bring up some topics that we didn't hit on earlier. This one's from Robbie. He says, all assuming the decision on holding Michael Porter Jr. out is on his parents, why would he even be practicing with the team if he wasn't going to play? Theoretically, he has just as much of a chance of getting injured in 5-on-5 practice as he does in a real game. Does this make sense, or am I off on this? Okay, so I think what Robbie is referring to is the ESPN story that was written talking to NBA executives anonymously about do they want to see Michael Porter Jr. play? Would that help his draft stock? And in that story, there is an anonymous source quoted who says this boils down to whether or not his parents – this ultimately will boil down to whether or not his parents want him to play. Now, I don't know. You can give your opinion on this, Dave. To me – my first reaction to that was kind of like, well, yeah, of course his parents are going to have a say in this. But my other point in that was I don't think if this kind of feeds this idea that the family is pulling the strings here on the return. I'm not sure why they would put Michael in the spot where the information's out there, he's cleared to practice, but now all of a sudden the parents aren't going to let him play. They would have not let it get to this point, I would think, if that was the case. Because now people are going to go, well, he was cleared to play, but he didn't play. What's going on there? Why didn't he play? Does he not want to play? Is he afraid to play? It creates this whole can of worms, and I don't think if the parents were so concerned about the image and saving him that they would have let it reach this point. That's my opinion. What do you think?
I mean, it just makes no sense. And let's not forget, I mean, Gonzo Martin's the boss here. And if he thinks that's what they're doing, he's not going to let that happen. I really do think the truth in this is the not sexy answer, that it's just day-to-day and people don't really know at this point yet when he's going to be able to play, if he's going to be able to play. And that's exactly what Gonzo said last week. We don't know when or if. And I think instead people just got excited. Oh, he's cleared to practice. He's going to play. And it's just that's never been what has been stated through all this. I thought that one story, I think it was the ESPN one, was pretty funny, that there was literally an anonymous source saying they didn't know what was going to happen. You really need an anonymous source to say, I don't know? I mean, it's just wild, the reporting that has gone on with this.
Yeah, well, I think also you have, it's a problem with the reporting, and it's also a problem of people not actually reading. I mean, it's like they, when you only, it's hard to, it's very hard to discuss what's going on here on Twitter, because it's like, there's not enough room, there's not enough context. So if you're following this on Twitter, you're going to be like, what is happening? And that's basically well, the way this has played out. There is a question from Jackson about Michael Porter Jr. being vegan, wondering, I guess, if that is true. It is true. He has shakes. The Porter family is vegan. There's like these special shakes that they drink and these special cinnamon rolls. I think Aaron Reese wrote about the cinnamon roll recipe for the Kansas City Star. This is a real thing. Now, I don't know what exactly that entails, but he is a vegan. Now, what I wonder is, does he ever cheat? Like, does he ever just like want a burger? Because I feel like, I don't even know if burgers are vegan. Clearly, people who've seen me know I'm not vegan. But I feel like there has to be some sort of cheating that goes on there. On the road, doesn't he have to break the rules once in a while?
I would think so. But then again, I don't know what life is like a future NBA lottery pick.
Fair
and
point.
This isn't new for him. He was doing this in high school. And I know back, I interviewed him back when, I think, when he was a sophomore or junior here in Tolton in Columbia, that he was, that was his diet, and he was still able to pack on a lot of muscle, you know, by the time he was a senior to his freshman year now. So it'll be interesting when he gets to the NBA and he's got, you know, a dietitian on either his NBA team or just he hires one personally, if they stick with that, or if they say, hey man, you need to get some real protein in you that's not just, you know, out of a protein shake. That'll be interesting to see.
I think I can cite an anonymous source that says, I don't know if Michael Porter Jr. cheats on his vegan diet from time to time. Chris asked us, assuming a Thursday night SEC tournament session is better for Mizzou fan attendance, what should Tiger fans be rooting for tonight and Saturday to make that happen? Well, I think based on the calculations that you had made, that's pretty much a lock at this point.
Yeah, and I think he's talking more maybe about the evening games as opposed to games earlier.
Oh, I'm sorry. I put the emphasis on the wrong syllable there. He wants Mizzou to play a p.m. late in the evening game. So he wants them to be in the, I guess, 7 versus 10 is at 7 p.m., and then you have 6 versus 11 or
right.
14, depending on happens. That would be like the 9:30 game.
You might have to lose to get into one of those games. So wouldn't you rather win and be the 5 seed and just play a little bit earlier? I mean, it's not going to look good if Missouri is at any of these games, if the crowd doesn't show up for Missouri because the tip-off time isn't right. I mean, those Kentucky fans, they won't care. Kentucky fans, there will be more Kentucky fans there watching the first day of action when Kentucky won't even be anywhere near the arena than any other fan base. So I would hope that Missouri fans would show up regardless what time that game tips off.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think Kentucky fans have actually been here for like advanced scouting, trying
scouting
to get in line for their seats that they already paid for. No, we joke about Kentucky fans, but if you haven't seen the wave before, it's freaky. I mean, it's blue everywhere, and they are loud and proud, and it's kind of like Kansas fans, but not quite as obnoxious as the way I would explain it to folks who haven't seen it before. Jason hit us with Mizzou women's basketball question, Dave. He wants to know why the tournament projections continue to not put Mizzou women's basketball in the Kansas City region. It seems that that would help attendance at the Sprint Center. You've explained this recently, but give us the Reader's Digest on why they're not going to do that.
Because you have to reward the highest-seeded teams with proximity. So you can't have Missouri as a 4-seed or a 3-seed playing in Kansas City along with a team from further away, Mississippi State, as the 1-seed. You can't have the 4-seed playing at home while the top seed is playing much further away from home. So because of where those regional sites are, it just doesn't – it probably won't line up for Missouri being a 3 or a 4 to be that close to home, because you have to reward the higher seed teams. Now, if Missouri wouldn't have lost a few games and they would have earned a 1 or a 2 in the women's tournament, then, yeah, you can reward them with, hey, your reward is going to Kansas City. So we've seen this before with, like, Duke, where there's always games in Greensboro or somewhere, out in North Carolina, for example, that you can play there as a higher seed, but not as a bottom seed, because the higher seeds are always supposed to be rewarded and playing closer to home.
Can you imagine what Dawn Staley's reaction would be if she had to head to a regional that her team was seeded better than Missouri's team, but it was closer to Columbia? I don't think she would. I don't think she might have to file a lawsuit about that.
She would sue the NCAA.
And Greg Sankey would find Jim Sterk. Okay, we joke. All right, well, those are the questions that we had. We encourage people to tweet us questions, things they would like us to discuss on the podcast, and we'll continue to do that. I think it adds some fun to have some fan interaction. And they seem to have a good sense of humor, which it makes me feel good about our audience. I feel like they get us. And to folks who are maybe just tuning into the podcast for this first time, first of all, where the heck have you been all season? We've only talked about Michael Porter Jr. for all of like 13 hours by the time this season will be over. But if you're just tuning in, welcome aboard. And a reminder that you can find this podcast and all of the previous ones on the archive. It's easy to find. Just go to stltoday.com/podcast, or you can even easier, subscribe via iTunes, Google Play Music, whatever you use to download your podcast. You can find us there. Just hit I on the Tigers podcast and we'll pop right up. Dave, we'll let you get settled in. I know you're probably not even getting a chance to really kind of come down from your trip to Nashville before you got to cover another game and then get here for the tournament and then back to Columbia for a tournament, NCAA tournament announcement. It's going to be a busy time. The women's team is also in motion, so we'll let you go. But thanks for the coverage. Thank you for your insight here, and we'll do it again here next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Ben.
All right, for Dave Matter, I'm Ben Fredrickson. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.